They can be a great people color if they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 50 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that somehow managed to reach 50 issues without being cancelled by DC. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
This is going to be a huge issue. In this massive anniversary issue, we look back at DC's newish 50 or so and sending Batman back to zero. Marvel gets Weekly, Adaptive and Mighty, and the X-Files comic gets some details. Then Drax is cast in Guardians of the Galaxy. Marvel and DC announce new dates for the TV series. Nicolas Cage quits setting himself on fire, and new trailers for Iron Man 3 and Kick-Ass 2. Plus our own Kick-Ass pick of the week, us. This is Behind the Panels.
Official. I'm going to go watch Iron Man again.
Oh, yeah.
After this show.
I just watched it last week, but man, I'm pumped to watch it again. David McVeigh, 50 issues. How do we get here?
I'm not sure. I think we actually sat down every week or every 2 weeks or every 4 weeks.
Well, Mom does.
And turned on some microphones and said, do you know what? We like comic books.
We have read a lot of them in the last 18 months.
I've read more comic books in the last 18 months than I think I've read in the last 10 years, but that's beside the point.
Now, you touched on something there. It has been a bit irregular the last couple of months, but we, as of issue 50, we are back to a weekly podcast. At least that's the plan.
We need that cheering sound you used to have.
Yeah, I know. I don't know where it's gone. But you'll actually be hearing a regular sound this show. But I just thought, because this is our anniversary show, let's just have a quick look back over some of the highlights of the last 50 episodes or so. Let's go.
Welcome to Between the Panels, issue 1. I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm Richard Gray.
How are you, Richard?
I am fantastic, David.
We are finally recording this thing.
It's been, I think, 7,000 years in the making.
Something like that. And it's still not even finalized. So we thought we would just start.
We haven't got an intro down yet.
Who will campaign door to door for America? Carry the flag shore to shore for America.
Welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 5, the only comic book podcast where our weakness is the color yellow. I'm your host, Richard Gray.
And I'm your co-host, David McVeigh. How many of those do you actually have, Richard?
723.
We're going to keep going until you run out of them. How's that sound?
All right.
Just hang on to your lariat.
The only comic book podcast that has sidekicks known as Slothboy and Jerry the Cowboy.
Comics podcast where nobody is dead until you see the body.
The comic book podcast that's not only legally allowed to drink now, but briefly hung out with the Wonder Twins in the 70s. The only comic book podcast that has been denied existence by Alan Moore.
The comic book podcast that has 16 points of articulation. The comic book podcast that wraps its hosts in limited edition foil covers. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other host, David McVeigh. That's good. I like that.
It's the comic book podcast that has a utility belt full of emergency kittens. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. Where do you pull these from?
Stop, you fool!
I guess I might as well go watch Marcia until Miss Prince comes back.
Now, I'm sorry. I heard something different, and I really want it to be true that she said, let me go wash my
shirt. I think that... I think rather than... even more disturbing than that...
quality, quality stuff.
Even more disturbing than that, I think she actually said, I'm going to go watch Marsha.
Yes, that's exactly what she said. And I'm going, watch her do what?
Well, if it was me, I'd go watch Marsha wash. There is
nothing we can say about this comic book that's going to be better than that. All right, that's a show, ladies and gentlemen.
You're right, Dave. And I think in the 20-odd issues since we did that, there's been nothing we've said that's better than that clip.
No. I think we excel. Now, we should explain just a little bit of context behind that clip. That was the day we recorded six shows in a row.
Yeah,
and that was bang in the middle.
Because I was like, about to go off on holiday.
And boy, I was punchy by that stage.
And then this thing came in, and it was this clip out of nowhere came in, and I'm going to go watch Marsha. Which David misheard as I'm going to go wash Marsha.
Which made it all so much better.
Much better. That is, of course, one of our vintage clips of the week, which, this being the 50th anniversary, we're certainly not going to get away without doing one of those.
Oh, okay.
So I'm taking you back to 1972.
It's Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin? What are you doing here? Robin and I were on routine bat patrol in Gotham City when we detected an airplane overhead flying without lights. Suspecting that someone might be smuggling contraband into the country, we followed the plane on our Batmobile radar scope. And it led us to this old farmhouse. Now let's have a look at that crate.
It's strapped to the floor.
Well, we'll just unstrap it, eh, Batman? Right, chum. Shh. Someone's upstairs. Lights out. Scatter.
Who's down there?
Nobody. But us chickens. Good evening, madam. Please forgive us for intruding. We hoped this house was deserted.
I'm Mrs. Baker. Are you people in trouble? Can I help you?
Perhaps. Can you tell us what's in that crate?
Oh, goodness. I never saw it before. How did it get there?
We saw two men bring it in.
Two men? Here? Oh, dear.
Don't be frightened. We'll protect you. They'll protect you. Let's just open this and see what's in it. Holy Harlequins!
Why, it's just a punch clown.
An amusing toy.
Oh, a wise guy.
Oh, Scooby, you broke his head off.
Zoinks! Never mind the head, look at the bread!
Just as I suspected. Counterfeit. A masterpiece of duplication, except for one tiny slip-up.
What's that, Batman?
President Lincoln never wore a turtleneck sweater.
I think that needs to go on a t-shirt. A masterpiece of duplication. Now, I just want to point out, this is just like a public service now, so I just want to point out to the makers of cartoons, we know there isn't a live audience.
It's a terrible strain on the animator's wrists, otherwise. Yeah.
It's like putting a laugh track on a cartoon, so they go, you really think we're not going to know? that's canned laughter.
That was, of course, from 1972, the new Scooby-Doo movies, the dynamic Scooby-Doo affair.
Oh, I was about to say, I thought maybe for a minute there I had that, because on DVD I actually have a Batman and Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Now, that was, of course, Burt Ward as Robin, but that wasn't Adam West I can't remember the name of the actor who played it, but it was a very different, just weird kind of hearing Burt Ward without hearing old chum next to it as well.
Absolutely. And the old chum that was delivered didn't sound right.
No, it was... I'm just going to see if I can find it in here. Oh,
what are you looking up on that magic box of yours over there?
That was Olan Sewell who played Batman. And he is best known, according to the Wikipedia, as the primary television animation voice of Batman from 1968 to 1984.
Well, there you go.
So he is as much Batman as Christian Bale or Adam West
or any of them.
Yeah. So
the only difference is instead of having Casey Kasem, he had Burt Ward.
That's right.
Yeah. Because Casey Kasem was Robin for all those early ones.
Now for the animated ones, of course. But he's, like, you know, this guy, he played the role of Batman on The Adventures of Batman, the new Scooby-Doo movies, Sesame Street, Super Friends, wow, the all-new Super Friends Hour, Challenge of the Super Friends, the world's greatest Super Friends, and Super Friends.
And Super Friends. So they finally got around to Super Friends after giving them all the other titles.
But then Adam West then took over on Super Friends as well, because Adam West did do some animation as well. So,
cool.
So yes, little blast from the past. I've been saving that one up for a while for a special day.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
And
I
today
like
was that special day, I feel.
I love the laugh track. As soon as I heard the laugh track, I went, what?
I think we should have a laugh track on the show, David.
We could.
Or we should work towards having a live audience.
I think a live audience would be better.
It'd be great. Like, if you're out there in listener land and you would like to see us in front of a live audience, just start supporting the show more, getting some people, get some friends together, get people to like us on the Facebook. Let's build an audience.
Yeah, what we got to do is we got to also putting reviews up on the iTunes page.
Yeah.
Get it featured, which will make more discovery for it and so forth, and let's get it out there.
So let's do that. We'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. But for now, we're going to talk a little bit about this. Oops.
Well,
no, we're not. We're actually going to talk a little bit about this.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Yeah,
that's much more entertaining.
50 episodes in, I still haven't worked out that when my mute button's off. So yes, what we've been reading, it's been, this is going to be a shorter section as the weeks go by, because we'll be doing these a week apart rather than 2 weeks apart, but a lot has come out in the last couple of weeks it's worth talking about. David, let's talk about sex.
Okay. No, actually, let's talk about sex, because that is that's an extraordinary experience.
Sex is a fantastic new image series by Joe Casey.
Mm-hmm.
I did a little mini review for this up on behindthepanels.net. And it's an interesting book because it's about a retired superhero who comes back to his home city after having been away from the scene for a few years and realizing what a hole it's become.
And you kind of get the impression that he's kind of like an Iron Man type character. It sounds like he had toys, basically.
He had toys, yeah. He might have been an Iron Man, Batman cross kind of thing.
Well, you don't see that, though, so we don't know. So.
No, and we don't know what he's like in costume, but he doesn't want to take the mantle up again. But he is, he wants to feel something. You know, he's just completely, he doesn't know what to do while he's not in the costume, but he doesn't know what he does out of the costume, and, you know, he doesn't know what to do, you know, but he doesn't want to go back to it. So he ends up halfway through this book, he goes to a strip club or a peep show, really, and watches these two women perform fairly graphic acts on each other, which is something that you don't see in a lot of comics. Mm. And this is pornography. This is straight out.
Well, we have straight up gynecological shots.
And this is, and I say pornography in the technical sense of the word, because
not in the judgmental sense of the word.
Exactly, because it's really well done. Mm. And when you actually think about what, and I think they might actually say this in the introduction, or I might have read it in interviews with Joe Casey. He says that sex is something that superhero books have lent up against heavily over, you know, the last 70 or 80 years. I mean, they're all spandex clad. There's bondage.
It's fetish.
It's fetish. And it's interesting that we can have violence so regularly in comic books, but sex is still the final taboo. So it's really interesting to see this book.
And think about the controversy, the last panel of Catwoman 1 caused when Batman got it on with Catwoman. Everybody
and that was
ballistic.
Nowhere near as graphic as this. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that
Archie and Veronica blush.
I think it's actually a really clever book because it sets the tone really well. You really feel the city. It's a sticky city. Mm. And you feel just the depravity of it. And you can feel that the tone is going to shift at any second. And what he does using sex in this book is catch you a little bit off guard. But I also like the way it's dealt with. It's dealt in a mature way that no one can really point at it and go, oh, you're just using that for titillation. It never feels like titillation. Even though it's graphic, it feels as though it's there for a reason.
It actually feels kind of grungy. It doesn't feel like titillation.
No.
It feels kind of like desperation.
You can almost feel the stickiness on the seats that he's sitting on. Anyway, this is a highly, highly recommended book. The first issue just flew off the shelves because it wasn't available digitally originally.
I was about to say, and this is the trick for you. It's a must-read book, but it's going to be a bit harder for you to
round up. But Image actually updated their website a little after that and said you can actually now get it digitally via iBooks directly or directly from the Image Comics website, then sync it to your iOS device if you want to. So that gets you around Apple's policy of not having sexually explicit material.
Which is really interesting considering that the Pro is actually on Comixology.
Ology, yeah. You know, I mean,
it's an interesting issue.
And you can get illustrated guides to the Kama Sutra on iBooks.
So some of it doesn't make sense. So.
Yeah, look, I don't understand. But the thing is, it is available digitally now, but it just disappeared off the shelves. But honestly, it's one of the must-read series.
Looking forward to issue two.
I'm going to add this to my pull list, so to speak.
That's a terrible phrase for the moment.
Yeah, yeah, actually, I'm going to add this to my standing order.
There you go.
At my local comic shop, and I really encourage other people to do it as well. It looks like it's going to be a massive year for Image because there's another book from the same author coming out later this year called The Bounce, which I'm going to keep an eye on as well. Mm. So, honestly, this is one of the best new books I've read in a while. Some of the other stuff, the big event that's come out, of course, in the last couple of weeks is Age of Ultron.
Yes.
This is written by Brian Michael Bendis, and the first two issues have been illustrated by Brian Hitch. They won't all be illustrated by Brian Hitch because this is a big...
How many issues do we know?
It's 10 by the looks of it. And there's a lot of hints that at the end of this Age of Ultron, it's going to usher in a new Marvel age. So if you remember after the big events, we had things like the Heroic Age started or
the Golden Age.
Like that. Like so when we had that big thing the last couple of years, it's always started. So there's a hint that we'll start in something that's going to be AI, which people think is a play on artificial intelligence, but it could be the age of something following that. So this is all about, but the really interesting thing about this book, it's just thrown you in. It dispenses with a prologue completely. It just says, you know, Ultron's back and he means business. And suddenly we're in this dystopian future, but Bender says it's now. At the start of the book, it's the present. So we don't know whether this is an alternate world. We don't know what's going on here because certainly there'll be key tie-in books that'll be, you know, what's Spider-Man doing in this world? What's, you know, Captain Marvel doing? All that kind of thing. And it's really basically a dystopian world where all the heroes are running from Ultron, this massive ship and machine that's hovering above the city, and we don't know what's going on.
And it's basically taking control of all technology.
All technology, you know, and the heroes are kind of fighting amongst themselves. They don't trust each other. It's just a wonderful, wonderful introduction.
It's vaguely reminiscent of the Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
When nobody trusted anybody and so forth. So it's fascinating. Hello, my screen just
screen's
died.
Screen's just gone, but it doesn't matter. Oh, it's back now.
Oh, there we go.
50 issues, still technical issues.
Of course. We wouldn't be the Geek Action Network without technical issues.
So look, this is Marvel's big event for 2013. This is the Avengers versus X-Men. They're actually releasing this fairly rapidly. It looks like it's going to be out weekly.
Well, issue 2 just came out. So.
Yes, that's a week later.
Yeah.
So I've read them both. They're rolling on. There'll be a few tie-in issues, but it's not... They don't seem like essential issues. You read this 10-issue arc, and then you roll into... I think there's going to be an Ultron standalone series that follows that.
Right, right.
And then I think that'll actually shift the line, which would be interesting because what Marvel now did was actually give you all everyone a jumping on point. Now, this might be their world shake-up kind of thing as well. So give people a new way of looking at the universe. It's very closely guarded secret, and the final issue is going to be drawn by none other than Joe Quesada himself. So he's coming back to draw that. So very, very interesting. But, David, we have to get on to Batman.
Yeah, I was about to say, when do we talk about Requiem?
Like last issue of Behind the Panels, we spoke about Batman Incorporated number 8, which had the rather shocking but understated death of Damian Wayne, Robin. Mm.
And last week I hadn't read it, and I have read it now, and it is remarkably sudden.
It is, and it's probably not so sudden for you, given that you knew
it was coming. But I'm just saying the way it's written. He's in the middle of combat, and then there's one frame, there's a sword through him, done.
But to be fair, I actually knew it was coming when I read it, because it was already been well hyped by the time I got even though I read it the week that it came out. But the aftermath of that has been massive. All of the Bat titles have a Requiem issue. The two that... worth talking about this week have to be Batman 18,
yes,
by Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV.
But more importantly,
but more importantly, surprising to me, Batman and Robin number 18, a book that I haven't read a lot of, but everyone said, read this book this week.
Yeah.
Completely silent issue, save for a devastating, heart-rending letter.
Yes.
Towards the end of the book. This book, if you don't have sort of tears brimming in the corner of your eye by the end of it, or just this deep sense of melancholy, you know, you're not, your heart's not beating anymore. Mm-hmm. This is the, you know, the long mournful cry of Batman into the silent night.
And I would go so far as to say that the reading order in this situation is you read that Batman and Robin first, because that's setting the stage for Batman.
Yeah.
Which is now he's been going 5 days straight.
Yeah, I read them the other way round, but I absolutely agree with you. Because I always read Batman's the first thing
I read.
Of course.
And normally I would have done the same thing, but because everybody had told me to read Batman and Robin, I had read that first. And I'm very glad I did, because Batman and Robin sets the stage for Snyder's Batman,
which is
also a remarkably touching issue, with a return of a character who we saw at the end of Court of Owls.
Absolutely. We hadn't seen Harper Row since issue 12, I think it was, when Court of Owls finished. And that was a great little single issue story. And pardon me, so many of those stories are done anymore where it's just a one-off story that takes place completely in a single issue.
Yeah, so we should remind people what that was about. So basically, Harper she works for the electrical company. Mm-hmm. She looks like she's a subcontractor.
Mm.
She starts to notice power surges, and she starts to track Batman through his little secret boxes where he's
and kind of helping him out
along the way, and basically becoming mildly obsessed by Batman. And at the end of that, Batman finally basically says, "Stop helping me, because you're basically going to get hurt." Now we flash forward to issue 18. We've now discovered that basically her obsession with him has gone a lot further.
Yeah, she's costumed up.
She's costumed. She tracks him.
Yeah,
so, you know,
and she watches him. But she's noticed that because he's been going for 5 days and nights straight. This is Batman coming out
and
in a day
as well. And
he's
getting sloppy.
He's sloppy. He actually got, you know, stabbed in the leg by a regular street tough. There's some beautiful artwork in this because he's basically taking out mostly just regular street toughs in this because he needs to take out his aggression somewhere. Yeah. And there's this beautiful shot by Andy Kubert because the artwork's been taken over this issue by Andy Kubert and Alex Maleev. Beautiful artwork. Not to take anything away from Greg Capullo's art because it's always stunning as well. But this is a beautiful shot of him illuminated by the Batmobile headlights holding up the street tough. And it's just one of the best shots. It would be one of the best pieces of art this week were it not for Batman and Robin 18.
Yeah, and there's that one shot in Batman and Robin 18, which I love, which is where he basically goes on his rampage or starts his rampage because he's so grief-struck. And there's that shot of Gordon coming out on the rooftop.
Oh, and all the...
And all the criminals just surrounding the Bat-symbol because he's just literally delivered everybody in one go. And you just go, he's out for blood.
So this is really interesting because it's kind of reminiscent of almost the start of Nightfall when he was just pushing himself beyond his boundaries that he could do. And look back over the last 50 issues where we did Nightfall. We covered
what's interesting though is in Nightfall he didn't have a Harper.
No,
and so what we have here and what makes this issue so special is we have somebody who basically tells him, "Go to bed, stop." And she understands
and
what he's
doing. Tells Batman, she tells Bruce Wayne as well, so, you know, to help where she can.
And I love that
know.
Where he goes, because basically he says, "I know what you're trying to do." He says in a cryptic phrase, basically, he's saying, "I know you're trying to be the new Robin."
Yeah.
And he basically says, "What do you think is going to happen? Do you think you're going to get a cape? Do you think you're going to come out and do this crime fighting? And do you think I'm going to go home, take off the mask?" And I love it when she actually says, "I don't care who's under the mask." Because that's not...
She said, "Look, Batman's a symbol, and we can't afford to lose you." It's basically what she's saying. So she's basically saying, "Pull your shit together."
Yeah, she said, you're grieving, understand, I don't know what it's about, but get over it.
Yeah.
You know, and go to bed.
Yeah.
Get some sleep.
So, I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, we wonder what a Batman and Robin book will look like without Robin. And Batman and Robin 18 kind of gives us a sense that it is an incalculable loss. What's actually going to happen in the practical sense over the next 5 issues, we're going to have Red Robin, Red Hood. It'll be Batman and Red Robin, Red Hood, Batgirl, Catwoman, Nightwing through to issue number 23. We don't know what's going to happen after that, I suspect. Although by that stage, I wonder whether or not how much of this Pandora stuff's going to be playing out, and you know where we'll be going there. But that's what's happened. If you haven't read these books already,
what we might also get though over these next issues is he might be rebuilding his family. Because remember, his family is shredded at the moment, and so by partnering with each one of these people, he might be able to rebuild the family.
It'd be interesting to see where Snyder goes from here as well after that. So I think they're now both books that I will read, you know, monthly. One other book I really, really quickly want to mention, apart from all the Uncanny X-Men that I've been reading lately in preparation for an interview and a special we're doing in a couple of weeks' time, is a book called Trigger Girl 6. Now, you might know the name if you've been reading Creator-Owned Heroes Anthology. And this was a book by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, who we've seen many times before, with beautiful art by Phil Noto. Now, this is a book about a kind of a semi-celebrity super assassin, these trigger girls who can't be picked up on cameras. One of them goes to take out the president. She fails, and then she goes to sort of track back her own past and see where she is from there. It actually finds itself sort of deeply rooted in environmentalism, which I didn't expect. But this, you can buy this as a single prestige format book now from Image Comics. Highly, highly recommend it. Beautiful artwork, really great story. Minor spoilers, talking animals.
Ah, furries.
So furries. But in an awesome way. I just didn't see half that stuff coming.
I actually have the creator-owned comic, so I may actually read this in its syndicated form or its, you know, its original structured form.
Can I just say one other thing that I read this week was the new Wolverine book.
Which I haven't read yet.
Which is the new one by Paul Cornell and Alan Davis on art. He's back. Alan Davis, very famous X-Men artist. If Wolverine and the X-Men, Savage Wolverine, Wolverine Max, and Astonishing X-Men weren't enough for you, and Ultimate Comics Wolverine, we now have another book. But we'll also be talking in our news coming up. There's going to be a new weekly Wolverine book.
Well, I want to know, what is it? Why? Start again. We only launched Savage Wolverine a month ago.
Yeah, why do we need another Wolverine?
Why do we need another one so fast?
And plus Wolverine Max. So I mean, it's just and they've launched him in the Ultimate Universe.
This is becoming
as well.
The Batman of the Marvel Universe.
Do you know there are? What did I work out? There are 18 X books.
It's becoming the Batman of the Marvel Universe. Yeah. It's getting a little.
X-Men X-Men have always had a lot of spin-off books.
And don't get me wrong, I love the X-Men.
I just don't need to read 18 books a month.
Exactly. I'd rather them kind of condense it into a couple of books, maybe. You know what I mean? It's like, because remember, you've also got Cable and X-Force, and you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. And you've got X-Men Legacy is out at the moment
Extreme
as well.
Extreme X-Men, although I think X-Men. That's going. All new X-Men. There's a new book coming out,
Uncanny
just called
X-Men. All new X-Men.
X-Men's coming out, but that's going to deal with the X-Women.
Right. X-Men is going to deal with the X-Women.
It's just going to be called X-Men, but it'll be exclusively dealing with a team made up of women.
I wonder if this follows in the heels. There was a one-shot a while ago called The X-Women or something like that. And it was actually the women of the X-Men universe. So it's
women of the Big Ten X-Men.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I want to quickly mention before we move on with this thing, because we probably do have to rapidly move on. We don't really have to rapidly
do
anything.
We don't have to rapidly do anything. We can do anything we want.
David, what birthday. Have you been reading?
It's our birthday, man.
Where's my freaking cake?
Aside from reading Batman books, to the hilt, and once again, X-Men, yes, because we have a lot of reading to do there. I actually went back and I read the Spider-Woman Origin. It's a Bendis book from, I think that's 2004-ish, so it's about when he started doing his, it was about during his run of Avengers.
Avengers, yeah.
And she was now a member of the Avengers and all this stuff, so he kind of went back and did an origin story for her, because I think there's always a lot of confusion about Jessica Drew and so forth. And it's interesting. It's a 5-issue limited series just called Spider-Woman Origin. And it's not deep, but it kind of explains the whole Hydra thing, S.H.I.E.L.D. thing, why she's doing what, why she's a double agent, you know, and all this is that keeps getting alluded to and hinted to all the time. So this kind of puts it into perspective. It's not a bad read. It's actually not bad. So if you can find it, it's not bad.
Can I just put this out there? I don't often to admit to these things in public, but if I could sleep with a comic book character.
Oh, she's it.
It would be Jessica Drew.
Yeah, that and Karen. Power Girl.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, hasn't been a lot of TV this week because Arrow's on a break. Walking Dead is still doing what it's doing. So what I ended up doing was going and catching up on. We had kind of a character based episode this week with Walking Dead, and it wasn't too bad. But we are going to do our Walking Dead special coming up.
Not too far away now, actually, because how many episodes we got left?
Not too many.
No.
And we'll probably do an Arrow special around that time as well. It's only got about another month or so to go. And about that time, it's going to start on Australian TV.
Although it's only got a month's worth of episodes, but the way they're going right now, they'll be able to stretch this out until, like, November.
Yeah, no, apparently May. Apparently it ends in May, and the first season comes out on DVD and Blu-ray in September.
Can we just throw it out there to the WB Network that we really don't like these big breaks in the middle and stretch.
A mid-season break, if everyone's doing it, fine, but to take another two-week break.
No, a break every couple of weeks is not good.
It's not cool, guys.
Not cool.
But so what I ended up doing is going back and catching up on Young Justice.
Nicholas has been watching it. Yeah, so we have an in-studio audience again. Nicholas is here for in-studio, but he's been watching it as well. How'd you find it?
I'm loving it, and I'll be disappointed when it finishes because I think it's actually – what it actually has reminded me of, and this is something we'll talk about soon – is that I miss the old DC universe. And even though Young Justice is kind of set on a Earth 16, I think they're calling it, so it's not really our DCU, but it's the closest thing we have to the original DCU at the moment. Kind of all these characters that we just don't have in the New 52, or the New 50 as it's going to be soon. New 50-ish something or other with a few specials. But it just doesn't fit on the top of a cover.
No.
But New 52 rhymes.
Yeah. The problem is that if it's not 52...
See, they could have gone with a New 22 and it still would have rhymed.
If it's not 52 issues and it's not 52 titles and it's not new, why are we still putting the New 52 on the titles?
Look, I'm just really enjoying it, so I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk about some of DC and Marvel's new animated series coming up. And unfortunately, they just haven't really made this series that well available on DVD and Blu-ray and that sort of thing. It is available on DVD, but not as a box set. And they've really kind of stuffed up the
I've
releases of those things.
I've seen a bunch of season one, and I actually really liked it. I thought it was really, really well done.
I'm just about to finish season one, so
yeah, no, I really liked it, and I'm sad to see it go. Actually, we've seen a bunch of cancellations in animation this week, though. Mm. I mean, with that, and I think Green Lantern is finishing.
Yeah, well, that and Green Lantern are finishing, and what the DC Nation section of CN's replacing it with is going to be a new Batman series, which is going to be in the same style of, I think it's called Beware the Batman, and it's going to be in the same style as the Green Lantern series. Yeah, I know, exactly. And then Teen Titans Go will come back.
That's actually in the news.
Which is in the news, so we'll talk about that coming up.
We'll come back to that one.
So, speaking of news, David, maybe I should press this button.
Okay.
What a scoop!
Getting notes from the gallery.
He really doesn't like the look of Teen Titans.
No, it looks terrible.
Well, we'll come back to
slagging off Teen Titans in a minute, because I think Nicholas might be our resident animated comic book expert here. News this week. Actually, it's been a really, really, really big news. Really, really big news for weeks. It's been a really big week. It's been a really big week for news. We've had all the solicitations for June come out, and DC has got something. Is officially looks like it's going to be the new 50, because there are only 50 titles that have been solicited for June.
Do you think they miscounted?
So I went through and had to count this twice and actually found verification on another site. They're actually bringing, they've got four new series launching, but it still makes them too short. They're also bringing back other non-New 52 titles, Astro City and 100 Bullets as well, coming back that month, which is great for fans of those series. But where we've got the much, much hyped Superman Unchained, which is going to be the Superman book by Scott Snyder with art by Jim Lee and Scott Williams. In other words, it is a essential read.
Now, how nervous is Scott Snyder at the moment? There is so much anticipation on this on this book after his Batman run. Everybody's going to be really scrutinizing this. Boy, how nervous must he be?
And
good luck.
Because he said that he has to write every Batman issue. I think I heard this on the Kevin Smith interview. He has to write that as though no one's reading.
Yeah, exactly. He's always paranoid.
Even now. But of course, it won't be the only new Superman or Batman book coming out in June. We've also got a Batman Superman coming out, written by Greg Pak and art and cover by Jay Lee.
Because what we need is a new Batman book, of course.
Yeah, because we've only got, I think, 13, 14 of those. This is also a new Superman book, but there was a Batman Superman book in the old
thing. And it was actually a really good book. I used to really enjoy Batman Superman.
So I'm glad that's coming back. Lafleeze is getting his own title.
I don't quite know how that's going to work as its own book. I love the character, and I love him in context with the Green Lanterns.
See, that's where it should work, and this is the problem with DC. Yeah. They keep giving people their own books when really, I mean, he's a great thing.
He's a one joke character.
He should get a miniseries. He should totally get a miniseries, but I don't know if he should get an ongoing. Trinity of Sin, Pandora, number one, is also...
Now, I'm very curious about this book because we've been waiting a long time for the Pandora stuff to start, and this is going to be leading us to the Pandora War,
and David,
or the Trinity War.
You found a really interesting art detail
and
on the cover.
And I did. I'm going to bring it up on screen for you here because I've actually got it loading it right here. Something I noticed as I was looking over this cover, because as we all know...
David's a Power Girl fan.
I'm a huge Power Girl fan. I'm going to admit that. And I was shattered when the New 52 started because there was no Power Girl represented. And then when they did finally bring her in World's Finest,
you couldn't see her breasts.
Well, I couldn't see her breasts. No, they just completely fundamentally changed the character. I thought, why? This isn't Power Girl if you do this. But in this graphic for the cover of this Pandora book, in the background is Power Girl in her original costume.
I have to say Pandora looks pretty kick-ass on that.
And that's something I was actually talking to Nicholas about this morning. Have you noticed something? This is just, I want people to do their homework and go back over their comics. If you see Pandora in those early incarnations, like that little backup story that was in, so she was actually scarred.
Yeah.
And so she was kind of cool looking in her red, but she was kind of scarred. Every incarnation we're seeing as we're building up, they're making her hotter and hotter and hotter. Have we noticed this? So that she's now
that
actually,
she's a leading lady. Yeah,
she's now kind of a hot looking character with tattoos on her face.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, well.
Anyway, but I was very, very pleased to see the Power Girl costume back.
And the soliciting that is the march, the Trinity War continues. The speculation, and then you'll see this in our show notes, about maybe releasing 4 new weekly comics in October, which would be
digital onlys, or?
I would imagine so. Although DC have done print weeklies as well.
What they've been doing with a lot of those is they release them, and every third issue, they then print it.
What DC's also doing, though, is they're going to be revisiting Batman's origin, not that month, but coming up there's going to be a miniseries called The Zero Year, and it's going to be written by Scott Snyder, because he's not being scrutinized enough.
Well, he's not busy enough either.
So. Yeah, exactly right. And it's going to be Batman origin story. So he said he wants to look at those aspects that weren't covered in Batman Year One.
Yeah.
But also how this... Batman fits into the New 52 world. So, because we know there's some commonalities and some differences in that world for Batman. He said it's not let's redo the origin, it's time for a new story showing how Batman became who he is in the New 52. He goes on to say, we tried to preserve as much of Batman's history as we could and keep the, what we could of the history intact. It's the Zero Year, the one that no one has told the story of before. We see how Bruce became the Batman, built the cave, faced off with his first supervillain.
Interesting.
So, which is interesting because I think from movie audiences kind of feel as though we've seen that.
I think we've actually seen that in comic book form as well. Yeah. In some case, but not within context of this new Batman.
It's funny, and this is nothing against Snyder because I love his work, but every time anybody who writes a new origin story, we'll always say, we've never seen this before, it's never been explored before. I remember Andy Diggle was talking about when he wrote Year One for Green Arrow, it was like, well, yeah, there was the Longbow Hunters, there was an annual, there was a miniseries called The Wonder Year, there was, you know, it had been touched on before, but, you know, this is what's beautiful about comics. They're like our modern super day, they're our modern myths and legends. They can
and
be
it's also
reinterpreted.
About execution.
Yeah.
It's about execution. Now, can I just read you a blurb here that makes me laugh?
Mm-hmm.
This is on the on this list of solicitations for this month. It says Justice League of America number 5.
Yeah.
It says, reeling from the traumatic death following issue number 4's cliffhanger. Okay, spoilers, guys. Thanks.
Someone's dying.
Someone's going to die, but it says here, cliffhanger, the world's, quote unquote, the world's most dangerous team discovers what the secret society is ultimately after and who they are.
Yeah, the world's most dangerous team is in inverted commas because they don't even believe it.
They don't even believe it. But all I can think is following the death, so a character dies in issue 4. I'm putting bets down it's Vibe.
No, he's still got an ongoing series.
Yeah, but does it go past issue 5?
Is Vibe solicited for that month?
Let's have a look. Where is he?
He's in the crosshairs of the Suicide Squad, so let's not count him.
Oh, there you go.
Let's not count him in yet.
Okay, so yeah, he might be the one.
Well, also in June, Marvel's got some books coming out in June as well.
Oh, who cares about that?
They decided not to stop publishing because you know,
they got scared by DC's lineup. Yeah.
Well, they'll be finishing Age of Ultron that month, and that'll start AI, because you'll actually have Age of Ultron number 10 of 10, and then Age of Ultron 10 AI. I look, the number, like if you click this digitally, the numbering is going to send you baddie. But new stuff that they've got coming out this month looks really interesting. A mini series called Daredevil Dark Knights,
right.
Which I'm definitely on board for. And there's also going to be a Thor the Dark World prelude coming out in comic book form. I haven't read the Iron Man one because apparently that's floating around.
I've got that. Now, what I think is interesting about the Thor the Dark World prelude, they're much more on the ball this time because if you remember, the Thor movie adaptation only just came out.
Yeah, that's right, actually.
So it's like, that was a little late, but looks like they're on the ball for this one.
Well, that's good, because we covered the Avengers prelude right back when the Avengers were about to come out.
So. And that was kind of interesting. That was kind of fun. I mean, it's light, but it was fun.
That was good. I mean, it's not. And it's
there was actually two. We didn't cover the other one, because the other one was actually a Black Widow.
That's true. It's movie canon, but not, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that they've got coming out, and I sort of mentioned this before when I was talking about the Wolverine book, is that they've got weekly comics coming out. Now, they released this thing, they've got these things called Infinite Comics coming out, and you might have noticed last week, and I did a little review for this, that there was a Guardians of the Galaxy Infinite comic written by Bendis, and it was about Drax the Destroyer.
Yep.
And there's a little vignettes that sort of tell a bit of a story of a background for each of these characters. That was a particularly good one.
I just love the last line in that where basically he says...
I just need a purpose, you know.
Him and Quill meet up and he says, don't make me look bad or something. Yeah.
He don't make me look bad, but he also kind of says, like, you know, I just need to do something useful. And it was a really great motivation for Drax, who kind of has killed Thanos, which was what he was born to do, and now he needs something. I suspect Thanos will be back.
I suspect his purpose is coming back. Yeah.
Yes. But Wolverine's going to be... It's going to be called Wolverine Japan's Most Wanted, and it's going to be a weekly thing.
Wait. Another Wolverine?
Okay. So we're going to have... It's going to be written by Jason Aaron and drawn by Jason Latour. So, I'm already on board because Jason Aaron's doing some amazing stuff with Thor at the moment.
Yes.
And featuring art by Paco Diaz. It's written by Jason Aaron and Jason Latour. It's set in Japan. It pits Wolverine against the Silver Samurai. So there's probably a good reason that they've got it coming out because in the movie version, he's going up against Silver Samurai as well.
Yep.
An army of ninjas and ultimately leads to a confrontation with Sabretooth. So it's going to be 13 chapters initially, but they'll see where they go from
look
there.
At the format of these pages. This is digital. This is pure digital.
It is going to be pure digital. And I suspect that they are aiming these at a slightly newer audience that might be coming in from the movies because have a listen to the way they've been promoting it.
So, Ellie, what's the deal with these Infinite comics, the ones exclusively available on the Marvel Comics app? I usually buy my comics at the store. How do you read an Infinite comic?
Well, Daniel, you have a mobile device, right?
Yeah.
Can you swipe it?
Yeah.
Then just swipe it.
Really?
Really.
Wow, it's like...
The next stage of evolution in comics?
Yeah.
And it's just one swipe away.
Hey, Dave, you know what that sounded like? The next stage of evolution in comics?
What's the deal with this? What's the deal with Infinite Comics?
What is the deal with airline food? I suspect that we're not the target audience.
Target audience for that ad, that's for sure.
But the other thing they've got coming out, which is kind of interesting, is there's something called Project Gamma, which was teased a little while ago, and now they've explained what it is at the South by Southwest appearance. Project Gamma is going to be adaptive audio. Now, what this means...
Adaptive audio?
Adaptive audio. So it's basically, it's an adaptive audio experience that will respond to digital comics reading behavior. So basically, Project Gamma will play audio as people read through a story.
So like an audiobook?
Not quite, because it'll tailor the musical tunes and other sounds to your pace as well of reading. And it'll do it on the fly to there's not a generic looping soundtrack in the background. So looks like they're gonna do Avengers number one as their first adaptive audio experience. Here's just a little bit of audio talking about it.
Marvel's Project Gamma. You've read comics. You've experienced digital comics. Now, listen up. Immerse yourself in the Marvel Universe. No loops. No soundtracks. It's adaptive audio. You control the pace. You control your universe. Marvel's Project Gamma, coming soon.
And you know what? From that ad, I still have no idea what it is. It's a soundtrack.
It's a soundtrack that doesn't do exactly... It's not like a standard soundtrack, so it doesn't just play through.
I need to see this working.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
Yeah. Look, I can actually understand. When I first heard this, I thought, okay, this would be a very interesting idea. The idea of an audio book, but with pictures. You know what I mean? So as you move through panels, it was read to you. I thought that could be kind of interesting. It's the ultimate lazy, but it could be interesting.
It's kind of why we got iPads in the first place, because it was the promise of having that sort of interactive multimedia experience.
But just playing a sound...
Picture this. Oh. Your next trip.
Hello. picture this. Okay, what?
this is one of the things that happen when you plug your laptop into a... I've just lost the article now. As a result of closing the ad, it decided it didn't want me to have the article either.
Fair enough.
I've just turned off the audio. The other thing that they've got coming out is Marvel are really, really punching up their digital and original content as well. What they've got coming online is something called Earth's Mightiest Show. And it's going to be an online show. It's going to be hosted by Blair Butler, who people will know from G4's Attack of the Show.
Right.
And apparently it's just going to be a fun look at all things Marvel.
Oh, I'll be watching this.
It's going to, do premieres of things.
Is this an online show? It's online, yeah?
It sounds like it is, yeah. It's going to be doing Marvel Superheroes, What The... and the Watcher. Here it is.
New series will run on Marvel.com.
There you go.
All right.
So also in the works, a History Channel-like documentary and reality TV videos... and it's just going to be, so that was like they announced a whole suite of stuff at South by Southwest, and that was one of them. The other things was the Infinite Comics and the adaptive audio. So, look, kind of looking forward to seeing where that goes as well, because I think it's good to have more of this original content
Absolutely.
Online. The last comic story I will mention very quickly is we mentioned a few weeks ago that IDW was going to be, and I think I've got the wrong link in the show notes here, so just... ignore that one for now.
This is the one that says that they're bringing Apple's iBookstore?
Yeah, that's not the story I wanted at all. basically, it's going to be The X-Files is coming to...
Comic books.
Season 10. It'll be season 10. So, we weren't sure whether it was going to be a direct follow-on or it was going to be a series of one-offs. It is actually going to act as season 10. The creators have been announced. Go check out idwpublishing.com for all the details. So
fantastic.
I just thought that'd be interesting to bring that up.
Look, there's been very, very, very successful at the moment with Buffy season 8 and 9 and with Smallville season 11. We also had Firefly continuations. It's like for all those shows that we want more of and they've cancelled for one reason or another, they've been very successful with this. So there's no reason why X-Files couldn't continue on. Although, that being said, I think we kind of said everything in X-Files.
Yeah, after 9 seasons of television and two films, movies, I don't know if there's anything left to say.
And there's also talk about another movie now.
Yeah, well...
So I think we've kind of done everything on X-Files that we could do, but let's see.
Well, speaking of movies, I'm very, very keen to move into this next section, not because of a timing issue, but I really want to talk about the first story.
All right.
Oh, and I'm going to have to remember to not mute my computer every time I do this.
It just adds to the charm of the show.
Why won't you work? We have a Drax.
Yes, we do.
For Guardians of the Galaxy, there was speculation a little while ago that it was going to be... who was it?
Jason
Momoa. And we thought, yeah, that'd be good. But Dave Bautista, I think that's how you pronounce it.
He's a big boy.
He's a big man. He's a pro wrestler. And he's a WWE guy. He's been signed on. When you actually see photos of him, he's got... the tattoos down in both arms as well. So he kind of looks like a white version of Drax as it is now. So he beat out people like Saya Mustafa, Patrick Wade, and Jason Momoa to the role.
We don't know if he can act, but I think my son summed it up best this morning when he said, oh, he's a WWE wrestler, so he's already an actor.
Yeah, exactly right. he doesn't have to do a lot in this thing. The only other casting is Chris Pratt for Star-Lord. So
yes. We're still waiting for casting on
Gamora.
And of course,
Rocket Raccoon.
I was going to say, the two most important things at this moment are who's voicing Rocket Raccoon and who's going to play Gamora.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my son this morning, and I said, it came to me I think I know who I want for Gamora. Mm. As it stands in Guardians, as you pointed out, if we start going into subplots and getting deep into it, it may not work. But just as a character in Guardians, Gina Carano.
I'm getting it mixed up. What I've done in my mind is I've combined Gina Carano with Tia Carrera.
Yeah, there you go.
Which would be a hell of a woman.
We're talking about the woman from Haywire.
Mm.
Who is a mixed martial arts champion.
Yes.
She's also incredibly good looking. Mm. And you just look
is at, she the deadliest woman in the galaxy?
I think she could be.
There you go.
I think she could kick ass, and she would look good in green next to this man in green.
It has to be someone who looks good in green.
Absolutely. Somebody who looks good in green and with very little clothes on.
So excited. James Gunn's actually in London at the moment. Prepping and readying to shoot. So I reckon there's been more casting that's happened.
The casting is going to come really fast now. Yeah. So we're literally going to see these people just fall into place because they're not going to be able to wait.
It's a good thing we've gone weekly, David.
Yes.
Speaking of weekly, Marvel and DC have announced new TV shows. Well, they've actually announced the dates. These were shows we spoke about a while ago. Avengers Assemble. Is going to replace Earth's Mightiest Heroes. It'll be a slightly different feel, but it looks very similar though.
It's got a similar look to it. So.
But it's going to have more of a classic Avengers lineup. But it's basically going to follow the movie Avengers lineup. Although I've noticed that the Falcon's hovering there in the background,
and he's in the new Avengers.
He's
going to
be in the new, yeah.
So they're setting it up to follow the movies.
Yeah. The other series, which made me laugh, Hulk and the Agents of Smash, sounds like a stupid concept. Except when you look at the voice cast that they've got for this thing,
voice cast is fantastic. But
it's amazing. They've got Eliza Dushku in there. She's playing She-Hulk. They've got Tatsuki Ore, who's doing the voice of the Hulk, so he's also playing it in Avengers Assemble.
We've got Mr. Krabs as Red Hulk.
Mr. Krabs from Clancy Brown, or the Kurgan, if you prefer, from Highlander.
Red Hulk. Yep.
As Red Hulk. You've got Ben Diskin, who was in Avatar The Last Airbender, as Scar, and Seth Green as A-Bomb.
Pardon?
Yeah.
I love Seth Green, don't get me wrong, but as a Hulk?
Yeah, so look, you know, bless him. So that's
although
happening.
He's the only Hulk smiling. So
if you just the dates for that, it's coming out. It's going to be released on July 7th in the US.
Right.
That's for Avengers Assemble, and Hulk and the Agents of Smash will be August 11th.
Fantastic.
So we've got those to look forward to this summer.
This summer. Now on the other side of the field,
We've got Teen Titans Go, which I can hear Nicholas cringing next to me.
I'm just going to bring the picture back up on screen here so that we can all remind ourselves why he's cringing.
And for those of you who can't see the picture, I'm going to remind you of why you're cringing in audio form.
Whether they're brawling with a disgusting slime monster,
pizza,
battling devious pizza delivery guys, or tackling complete and total boredom, they're the Teen Titans, and they're totally going to save the world, or something.
Really?
Well, maybe after a tasty sandwich.
Ain't no mountain high enough to keep me away from this sandwich.
Teen Titans Go! New series premieres next month only on Cartoon Network.
Oh, so good.
You know, in 30 or 40 years' time, someone will be playing that on the vintage clip of the week.
Oh, God. I think I just threw up a little in my mouth. If they could have, you remember, if we remember the Teen Titans TV series, okay, now there was a very big fan, loyal fan for it. I never liked it because it was really messing with the Teen Titans of the comic books. If you could have taken that and made it even more cutesy and make it even look more like Powerpuff Girls, you're in the right direction of this. This has taken it
They should have called this Teen Titans Friendship is Magic.
Or My Little Teen Titans.
My Little Teen Titans.
It is terrible.
I can't say I'm looking forward to that. What I am looking forward to.
Can I just put one more thing before you move on? What I think is really amazing is.
David, I just did the segue. You can't tell me to move on.
What I think is really amazing is these are kiddified Powerpuff caricatures of the cartoon series. If you look at Starfire, she's dressed the same way. So they haven't even gone back and caricatured the Teen Titans from the comic books. They've actually caricatured caricatures.
And the thing is, we've just come off Young Justice, which was a great series, and we tolerated the fact that Green Lantern series was floating around out there, like a big floater out there.
We just ignored it. Yeah, what we did.
Because we had such a great show in Young Justice. Yeah. But unfortunately, now it's going to not. We're going to have this, which is a kiddified parody, and we're going to have Beware the Batman, which has got that horrible animation style. So. DC failing on both fronts at the moment. Three fronts, in comics, in movies, and in...
although we've heard some rumors this week...
Man of Steel is meant to be pretty good.
Yeah, we'll come back to that as we get something solid on that, because we've only been hearing rumors at this point. But
and I didn't mind the Batman movies. Yeah. I suppose they were all right.
They're all right. But what I'm saying is that, I mean, DC has not had a great track record in movies, but the one thing they've always done is really good television.
Mm.
Their animated stuff has been...
It's always been good.
It's been strong. And Marvel has always been weak in animation and strong in the movies.
The tables have turned.
Well, DC can't seem to do anything at the moment, and that's the problem. So it's like, I don't know what they're doing.
Yes, I think they've proverbialed the pooch on this one.
Now, before we go any further,
yes,
because it's only about 5 minutes away now,
yes,
I think we should throw out a disclaimer.
Okay.
At this point.
We're going to be playing two trailers. We're going to be playing a trailer. We're going to talk about Nicolas Cage for a while.
And
then we're
going
to play another trailer in a sequel to a movie that Nicolas Cage was in.
Correct. But... It's going to push the boundaries.
The second trailer is what we would call explicit. It is a lot of language in that one, so we'll give you another language warning heads up just before we play that. But even though we don't carry a clean tag or an explicit tag, we're going to get a little potty mouthed around this time. Well, we won't.
And I thought I'd mention it now so that those who are driving have time to turn off their
devices.
Yes,
so don't just kind of freak out and go, oh my God, I was just driving along and suddenly I heard somebody drop a cuss bomb.
But we'll come back to that. So you've been pre-warned.
But first of all, I'm going to play this trailer, which needs very little introduction.
I'm Tony Stark. I build neat stuff. I got a great girl. And occasionally, save the world. So why can't I sleep?
You elected me on a single platform. I will defend this country at all costs. The Mandarin must be stopped.
You don't know who I am. You'll never see me coming.
About these attacks.
The whole world's gonna be watching.
The question, where is Tony Stark?
Things are different now. I have to protect the one thing that I can't live without. That's you. Mr. Stark. Today is the first day of what's left of your life.
Go!
I'm gonna offer the choice. Do you want an empty life or a meaningful death? You're not a man. You're nothing more than a maniac.
I'm not afraid of you. No politics here.
Just good old-fashioned revenge.
Do need backup.
That's your department.
Here's my boys.
The Iron Legion, baby.
Yeah, I don't think I'll bother seeing it.
Nah, it's over. Look, it's jumped the shark.
Yeah. No, look, this is the thing. This is interesting. Big ass trailer there. That was, of course, Iron Man 3. If you didn't guess from the
it's
I'm
not
Tony
far
Stark,
away. It's
I
not
make
far
stuff.
Away now.
We're actually getting this early in Australia. We're getting it April 24th. It got pushed forward from April 25th to April 24th, making us getting it even earlier.
Have we noticed that the American summer movie season is getting earlier and earlier?
Well, it comes out in May, like which is a traditional, the first weekend in May, which is the traditional start of the season for America. But we're getting it a week earlier. Don't know why.
We've been getting a lot of the Marvel stuff we get earlier.
Yeah, a lot of it. But then the Blu-ray comes out and it's only got one bonus feature on it. So
well, we won't go there, but you know.
Very excited by that film. Cannot wait. One of the things that you've noticed from that trailer is this problem they might have now with these films is this after the Avengers escalation.
Yes.
Everything has to be bigger and bigger and bigger, and we're not going to accept it. I mean, this is the first film after Avengers, so it has to kind of match it for levels of excitement and adventure. You know, it's going to be easy enough for Iron Man, which is an explosive kind of character to start with. I'm going to be interested to see where they go with Captain America after this, which by all accounts is going to be a far more personal story.
And it's going to be basically an espionage
story.
So, it's going to be very interesting to see where they go with that. Thor has the potential for being epic, though, because it's all in the Asgardian realm, and it's the Dark World,
and it's the Game of Thrones director.
So that's got potential to be like Lord of the Rings style huge.
Oh, I'm expecting big things from that, because I was surprised by the first Thor, not least of which is because I met this hairy guy in the press room, and he started stalking me for the next couple of years, and now I'm doing 50 episodes into a comic book show with him.
I know,
so
it's a bit strange.
You weren't that hairy at the time. You'd shaved for that day.
I shaved for that day,
because you were meeting Jamie Alexander. Remember that little tattoo she had on her wrist?
I do.
Yeah. Remember the way that Tom Hiddleston kept looking at her, and I think there was something going on between them?
I still get comments on my YouTube video.
According to our YouTube videos that were very interviews, those two were an item during our interview.
They're actually giving, on the comments on YouTube, they're actually giving each other time codes.
Time code, just like, see, he's looking at a breast. That's the point where he falls in love with. I don't know, stuff like that. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, it's very, very, very strange behavior out there, people. But it is a good interview. So, you know, and we both got good interviews up there. So go check those out, because we both got different things.
Join the legions of 30,000 people that have already seen it.
What we might do is we might embed those interviews on Behind the Panels, because they've never been there before.
Why not? Also, speaking of people that we find incredibly attractive, Nicolas Cage.
I could eat a peach for hours.
Oh, not the peach.
What's it from Ghost Rider? And he goes, What's up?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Ghost Rider, he's said that he's done with Ghost Rider.
Thank God.
He said, I think the ship has sailed on that one. He's on it.
You think?
He goes, at least with me involved.
You think?
he said they've been successful, but he's just not. You know.
Was the second one successful?
Contrary to whatever the perception is, that was an enormously successful movie. We made it for like $47 and $48 million, and it approached $200 million. And that was a success. And so, but I think he's putting the bunny back in the box on this franchise. We're not going to see him with his skull on fire anymore. Put the bunny back in the box. So I love that movie. I'm proud of the fact that I love Con Air.
I love Con Air. I think Con Air is a lot of fun.
I love
The Rock too. You know, yes.
Stanley Goodspeed.
Yes.
Yeah, that was his character.
I can welcome to The Rock.
can I do it? Gentlemen, welcome to The Rock.
There you go.
I can do Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery this episode.
I actually don't mind Nicolas Cage, and I think he's been in some fun stuff. Mm. And I just think that the Ghost Rider, as much as he may have been a fan, didn't suit him, and the films weren't that good. They may have been financially viable, but they weren't that good. And I would like to see a good Ghost Rider done, because I think it's actually an interesting character. Mm. They nailed the special effects by the end. They've got that down pat. Now we just need to build a film around that.
I think there's a good Ghost Rider film yet to be made, but I think it's going to be a long time. Like Hulk, we've literally been burned by this one.
Yes,
so.
I think Nicholas made a very interesting observation this morning when he said they're both owned by Sony at this point, so maybe they should do a Spider-Man Ghost Rider team up.
Ooh, that would be good.
Yeah.
That would be very cool. I'd
be
down for that.
Or there actually was a comic book of it, so why not make a Venom Ghost Rider team up?
Right.
Because they own Venom.
They're already talking about a Venom standalone film and then a Venom Spider-Man crossover, which could be interesting. So
Ghost Rider could play in that world.
He totes could.
totes. Wow, you speak like one of them young folk.
You mean one of them young folk who are constantly learning my lore? We've gone completely mad at about the hour mark, and we're about to go a little bit madder because we're going to play a trailer which...
All right, at this point, I need to stop you and say, because just a warning out there for you people.
Language warning, PayPal.
And this will be one of those rare cases where I don't think we're actually going to... Now, where is it? Do I have it here? We're not doing any of that.
We're not going to bleep that.
We're not going to do any of that, all right?
So you may hear some bad words in here.
And then won't be covered by that.
See, I was going to do that, but it'd be too late. You'd have to do that in post. I don't want to create work for you. So we won't be covered by anything. And look, you know what? What the hell? Because this trailer kicks ass. It is the trailer for the highly anticipated Kick-Ass 2.
Ready to go again?
What do you want me to do?
Hit me.
You're a 15-year-old. What the hell?
Act like a bitch, get slapped like a bitch.
Oh, God.
Oh, take your tampon out, Dave.
They may wear costumes, but it isn't Halloween. They're real-life superheroes.
Me and Hit Girl, we're training every day. There were more and more people joining us every night.
Colonel Stars and Stripes, reporting for duty.
And try to have fun. Otherwise, what's the point?
A world full of superheroes, huh? Where do they get a load of me? I am gonna make Kick-Ass pay for what he did to my dad. Henceforth, I'll be known as... the motherfucker. You want more? I'm building an evil army. I'll bring you more. Who is this guy? He's claiming to be the world's first real supervillain. What an asshole.
We're putting an end to this, costume freak. If they're wearing a mask, they're getting detained.
Promise me that you will never dress up in that outfit again.
Kick-Ass isn't a costume. It's who you really are. My daddy made me promise I'd never stop defending this city. I prepared for anything.
We gotta make this right. The anticipation's killing me.
What's the party?
There's no room for punks and suits. Just real heroes. Who can really kick ass.
Game on, cocksuckers!
Who the hell are you?
We're the good guys.
You're the dead guys.
Franz,
Vida. Ow! Jesus!
Yeah, there's a dog on your balls.
Yes.
Now, for those who have read Kick-Ass 2, and we've talked about it on the show, the comic book was a bit disappointing.
Mm.
But what it looks like they've done for this film is they've taken Hit Girl and Kick-Ass 2 and they've merged the two together. Yeah. Because there's actually line-for-line scenes from Hit Girl and line-for-line scenes from Kick-Ass 2. And how good is Jim Carrey in that clip?
When they first announced the casting, I thought, no way. But like when you see him in costume and the voice
he is perfect.
There's a dog on your ball.
And that line where she's on top of the van and...
Oh, look, if you missed it and you fast-forwarded through that because you didn't want the swearing and you wondered which swear words were in there, all of them.
I was a bit worried when I found out that Matthew Vaughn wasn't coming back for this one. And I was a bit worried after reading the source material because Kick-Ass 2 wasn't that good. Combining Hit Girl and Kick-Ass 2 together, it's a better book. Yeah. When you actually even read the two back to back, it becomes a better book. Hit Girl filled in the whole...
It should have come out first and then...
It should have been part of the series. It should have been Kick-Ass 2 should have been those two books combined.
Yeah.
They made a mistake breaking them up.
Yeah.
It was a money grab. As far as I'm concerned, it was a money grab. Because it should have been, that story should have all been one story. That should have been Kick-Ass 2, and it would have been as iconic as Kick-Ass, putting it together. That looks fantastic. I can't wait.
I'm really looking forward to that. That shot up in my most anticipated
Absolutely.
Superhero. So this is going to be a massive year for superhero movies, because we've got Iron Man, Kick-Ass 2, we've got...
Man of Steel.
Man of Steel and Thor coming out this year.
Thor's at the end of the year.
November. So it's going to be a big, big year, people. Mm. And next year's just going to be just as big. Now, speaking of big, this issue of Behind the Panels, we are now at the traditional part where... Oh, actually, feedback time. I've almost forgot.
Why would
I miss an opportunity to play Girl from Ipanema?
There it is.
Oh, I don't have the feedback in front of me.
No, I have the feedback. So today we only have one piece of feedback. So let me just drop the sound a little bit here.
This week's feedback comes from regular writer Matthew Kutusiak.
Absolutely, and he basically says, "Hi, David and Josh."
Hi, except my name is Richard.
So, hi, David and Josh. Congratulations on reaching...
Don't make me pull the tampon out.
Congratulations on reaching 50 episodes for the Behind the Panels podcast. I started listening to it at issue 33, and it is fantastic.
And you still don't know my name is Richard.
I've also started reading Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm enjoying every page. Have a fun and safe 2013 from Matthew K. So there you go. And that's it for the girl from me.
Thank you so much for that, Patrick. I mean, Matthew.
Thank you for writing in. And if you do want to send email...
I'm just teasing you. Thank you so much for writing in.
If you want to send email, send it to feedback@behindthepanels.net. Or more importantly...
Hit us up on facebook.com/behindthepanels. Start liking, start sharing. That is going to be your portal for everything that we put out.
And if you want to hear your voice heard on the show, you can also leave voicemail using Skype and using Geek Actually as the user account. We have voicemail on that, so you can always leave us a short message. Try and keep it under a minute because we've got to keep moving.
And then we'll play it on the show.
And we'll play it on the show. We can hear your voice. Okay.
Speaking of keeping things moving, it's time.
What? Moving? What?
It's time for me to press this button.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
And this week's pick of the week is us.
Us, nothing. just us.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
What a phenomenal anticlimax.
Well, see how you like this. What we thought we'd do is we'd look back over the last 50 issues or so, look at things like DC's newish 50 or so, look at Vertigo, Marvel Now, maybe look at some of the other publishers that we like, some of our favourite picks over the last 50 issues or so. We've been asked to talk about our favourite comic book adaptation, so we'll talk a little bit about that. I think we just have been, but we'll keep going on. Maybe some of our favourite and least favourite trends and perhaps what we've learned as a result of doing this show and maybe what we're looking forward to. So,
or maybe none of that. We'll see how we go.
Let's just start the conversation now. We don't know when this is going to end. You could be here for a while. If you're driving, fantastic. If you're at work and pretending to do stuff while you're looking at pictures of kittens, this is going to be great.
That's what you look at work?
That's all my IP allows me to look at work. But you can get a lot. There's a lot of kitten play on the internet, let me tell you. Now, what I thought I'd do is...
Did we mention furries?
Okay. I think we did, actually, earlier. What I thought I'd do is, when we're going to talk about the DC's newish 50 or so,
right?
I thought I'd go back all the way back to issue 2 when we were talking about this. So whenever you hear this sound, you know we're going back in time. So we're going
all the way back machine.
It's the way back machine. So I'm going to fire up the way back machine, send us all the way back to November 2011, when we were first talking about how much we liked DC's New 52, but also what we were promised then, which has taken a while to come.
And the question was, what the hell's going on? Well, it turns out that DC's finally giving us a little bit of a bone to nibble on. At the end of some of the issue 2s of the New 52, they now have an article under the DC Comics All Access from Bob Harris, the editor-in-chief of DC. basically says, deep inside the DC offices, there is a wall that has played a very important part in the launch of DC Comics, the New 52. Actually, it's in coordinating editor Liz Gerland's office. On that wall, Liz has collected a page from each of the first issues that debuted in September. Although those 52 pages are all very different, showcasing the fantastic range of characters and styles of the DCU, it says they all have one thing in common, the appearance of a lone, mysterious, hooded figure. It goes on and says, one of the coolest things for me about the New 52 was that it gave us the ability to work very far in advance. We knew exactly what we wanted to do in terms of connecting Flashpoint to our new universe. Geoff Johns had an amazing backstory for the mysterious woman who appears at the end of Flashpoint number 5. We had a plan from where we thought she'd go next, but since we had enough time to really think, Jim Lee, Geoff, and I figured out that it was possible to expand this character's next appearance into all of the issue ones. A daunting task to be sure, but a one-time opportunity to do something like this and really drive home how important this character is. It does say that we will see the evolution of this character in the pages of Justice League.
No, we haven't.
No. And I was gonna say, they say they plan really far in advance. Really?
Really far in advance because we're 18 months into this. I'd like to actually take the opportunity to talk about how much planning they put into this.
Yes.
Because
also, can I just one thing before you say that?
Mm.
A daunting task putting her into every issue of the New 52. Not really. She was just painted into the background of a single frame of each issue.
Yeah. It wasn't that daunting, fellas. If that was the daunting thing, there's no wonder you've cancelled as many titles as I'm about to read out.
Read them off.
I thought I'd read this out. Here is a list of the fallen. Captain Atom. Justice League International. Mr. Terrific. Blue Beetle. Hawk and Dove. Legion Lost. Static Shock. I even forgot that one.
Static Shock.
Blackhawks.
I forgot about that too.
Grifter. I could never forget about that. Men of War. And then again in GI Combat. OMAC. Voodoo. Frankenstein. Agent of Shade.
That one I'll actually miss.
Hence the music.
Yeah.
Resurrection Man. Soon to be cancelled. DC Universe Presents. The Fury of Firestorm, the Nuclear Man. This is getting really serious now. The Savage Hawkman, the Ravagers, Deathstroke, Team 7, which lasted a whopping 8 issues, and iVampire. Now, I thought you'd like that.
I'd like to point out that there was actually about 4 titles in there I'd forgotten completely about.
Yeah, yeah. I
forgot about Resurrection Man. I forgot about... was when you mentioned...
which one? I'll go back over to the list again.
No, I forgot already.
I'd forgotten about Static Shock.
I'd forgotten about Static Shock. Yeah, that's the one. And there was another one there that you'd mentioned.
I've been trying to forget about Mr. Terrific.
Well, yeah, and the problem is they keep reminding me because he's coming back into Earth 2.
Yeah.
Now, one that actually started strong, the one that I was actually fascinated by for about 3 or 4 issues, and then it just kind of went... which was Voodoo.
Yeah, and also you were saying, when I went back, I was listening to clips of earlier shows, you were raving about Resurrection Men and
first
stuff.
First few issues.
Because
really
that was written by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning as well.
Yeah,
so
it really been, interesting you know, start to that. I thought, fascinating concept, and it's straight down the gurgler.
Oh, well. Now we
need a fleshing sound.
Now, really, the entire sort of listening to DC, reading the DC New 52 for the last 18 months, it's been a little bit. You know, because you kind of just feel your heart sinking each month. And we back then when we were back in issue 2, we were fairly optimistic about what was going on. We were excited. We were listening to...
I think you summed it up best when you said... Know, it's what made us start reading comics again.
Really, look, this show pretty much started because of the New 52. We, all those 18 months ago, we started reading more comics because DC's trick had worked.
Yeah, and we were talking about it and we said, we should be doing this as a show.
Yeah, and then 2 issues in, we thought, well, we're reading at least 100 comics a month now, so let's start, doing this. You know? Whatever it was, 60, 70 comics a month between DC and Marvel. At the time, I was DC guy 100%.
Absolutely.
I started reading DC. I started with, like a lot of people, with Superman, you know, and Green Arrow is my boy. What DC slowly did was disillusion me over the time. And David was a Marvel guy all the time.
I was about to say, I actually boomeranged around. It was really interesting because I was a Marvel devotee with occasional divergences into DC. I liked some occasional Superman. I liked a little bit of Batman. But I was and I really, at one point in the 80s, I was a big Teen Titans collector. Well, the new Teen Titans. And I was really enjoying that. But for me, it was always, I came back to Marvel. Spider-Man was my man. You know, he was my man. The X-Men were my people. This is where I was supposed to be. When we started rereading comic books again, I boomeranged over to DC. The New 52 took me into the DC world and threw me in there. And I was basically saying, okay, and I was reading very little Marvel.
Yeah, as was I at the start of this thing.
And I kind of swung back around because I started to reread Avengers comics and I started to reread this stuff. And I started going, wow, who's this Brian Michael Bendis? Who's this? And I started to rediscover these Marvel roots. All the time I'm rediscovering Marvel, DC is slowly going down the gurgler.
Well, not even that slowly. I think it was obvious to a lot of us very early on that something wasn't right. And I remember saying way back how I wasn't liking the vibe of Action Comics. I didn't like the vibe of Superman because there's something felt wrong. I missed my DCU.
The initial excitement of New 52 wore off really fast.
But by issues 2 or 3, I just wanted my old characters back.
And if you remember how jazzed we were over Aquaman when it came out, it never lived up to the potential of that first issue. No. I still read it now, and I'm still reading it because it ties into Justice League.
Well, Justice League went from being a must-read to I'll read it after I've gotten through the Batman titles
Yeah, month. And what Justice League did was one of the biggest sins a comic book can do, which is have such a powerhouse arc that when it came to the end of that arc, it felt like the end of a miniseries, and it literally ended. So when they started to go into their second arc, you went, who cares?
And it started getting really meta, and you started feeling as though, okay, well, you're tying into this Pandora thing, but that never came.
No.
Because they kept teasing it.
The only thing that was really interesting about Justice League in that second arc was the bringing back of Shazam.
And the Shazam back matter, that story was the backup story in that was
and that's
definitely
still strong.
Worth thrilling. And it's still the reason you get that.
Because quite frankly, as it's explained to my son, Billy Batson is a dick. And because of that, it makes the character really interesting.
Because
it's not the pure Boy Scout Shazam that we always
get. Because even in Young Justice that I was talking about before, he's always like, hey guys, let's go get that. You know, and it's like, even as Shazam, he's like really excited.
And so when you've converted him into Shazam, and who knew? All you had to do was put a hood on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've got...
There's a lot of hoods in the New 52.
There is. And to Geoff Johns' credit, the new Shazam has become compelling.
Yeah.
He's become interesting. And so you read Justice League and you go, okay, and what it used to be is you read Justice League. Now, you skim Justice League because you're getting to Shazam.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Look, honestly, like we've already mentioned the show, so we won't labor it too much, but Scott Snyder's Batman has become like the essential read for every comic reader anywhere. Whether you like Batman or not, it's just good storytelling. I've been saying this a lot. Green Lantern's arcs, the main Green Lantern story, has been very strong. I think with Geoff Johns leaving the title, I wonder if they can maintain the strength of that book. Obviously, Green Arrow was a book I would have long abandoned had I not been such a devotee of the character.
I did abandon it. So.
In fact, I left 3 issues, and it was only when Lemire's run was about to start I quickly caught up on the story. To see where they left it off.
I have read Lemire's first issue. I haven't read the second one.
I've read the first two. They're just as strong.
Look, I'm still having trouble. Lemire's got his work cut out. It's not that he's not a good writer. He's got his work cut out because he has to bring me back to Green Arrow because Green Arrow was broken.
See, I've been wanting to come back, so I'm half there. I've been just been waiting for someone good to start writing it, and I'm now sold on it. It seems weird because I think it's a problem with DC editorial in some ways, because Anne Nocenti is not a bad writer. And I used to blame her for the series, but looking at what she's doing with Katana, it's not too bad. I actually like the way she's taken that character, because she's making it her own, and she's going in its own direction. I think the problem, increasingly, from what I'm reading online, is that DC editorial have got some major, major directional problems. And you see that, just in that list of titles that I read out. The fact that 22 titles have been cancelled in 18 months... That's more than a title a month.
And the fact that 2 of them are the same book, I mean, essentially. except one had dinosaurs.
And what they've replaced some of these books with, like Justice League International has been replaced with Justice League of America.
Same book.
Effectively. You know, the fact that...
Well, it starts the same way. It's got you know, manila folders and discussions in a room. So
Mr. Terrific's just gone over to a different world, you know. They've put some of these some of the ones that have been cancelled, like Ravagers and Team Seven, haven't lasted a year.
Well, because they weren't compelling to start with. Who cares?
You know, when you create a book called The Fury of Firestorm, The Nuclear Men, you have to know it's going to get cancelled at some
stage. Now, can I actually point out, before we go any further on this, Firestorm, and I refreshed my memory on this because I managed to go back and find a few issues from the 80s, because I remember enjoying Firestorm as a comic book. And I went back to issues from the 80s, and I was having a look at them when it was Firestorm. That's what it was called.
Mm.
I think it was called Firestorm the Nuclear Man, actually. Yeah. And
not the Fury of Firestorm.
Or the Nuclear Men, which is where it kind of went off. And it was literally, he was a high school kid.
Mm-hmm.
He had a professor in his head, if you remember, because he was fused.
As we all did in high school.
He was fused, so he had this another voice in his head, basically, helping guide him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was actually a fun character. And
it was, because they were always talking to each other.
They were always talking, and they were disobeying. He would go off and do his thing, and the professor was saying, you shouldn't be doing this, and blah. And then he joined JLA for a while there. And it's like, you look and go, Firestorm used to be good. He used to be an interesting character, dynamic looking with the fiery hair and all this. He was a dynamic character. What they did in the New 52, I have no idea.
And David, you have summed up my feelings on most of the titles of the New 52. What they did in the New 52, I have no idea.
Exactly. You sit there and you look at it and go, why would you take something that was fundamentally not broken and break it?
Yeah. The other thing that I think's really interesting is, and you know it's something higher up, because Vertigo as a line has really started to drop in the last few years. It was interesting. I was listening to a fellow Australian comic book podcast, Non-Canonical podcast, which is a Melbourne-based podcast.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys. If you're listening, I'm not quite sure if you are. If you are, you can give us a shout-out in return. That's nice.
Let's do a crossover.
Crossover between our two worlds, Melbourne and Sydney, together.
We'll get a Skype connection going. We'll be in this studio. They'll be in that studio.
Oh, man, it'll be the biggest thing since JLA versus the Avengers.
Now, we should point out that they're probably not even listening.
So no, probably not. But they could be. You know, it's a small world out here in Australian comic book podcast land.
If they are listening, feedback at behindthepanels.net. Write to us and let us know what's going on.
But also, they were talking about the death of the Vertigo line as well. And it did occur to me after I heard that there aren't as many strong titles. When you go back a decade or so, there was just title after title after title. And they've cancelled a lot of the ones. Like, I mean, American Vampire was a big title for them. But they've cancelled things like Saucer County. And things like that as well. I mean, they've been having these miniseries, Dominic Laveau, New Dead Wardians,
Spaceman,
Punk Rock Jesus. They've been good, but Vertigo isn't the powerhouse. And in fact, a lot of that creator-owned stuff we're now seeing over an Image and places like that. And we'll talk about Image a bit more in detail in a moment. But I did want to refresh our memories and go back and have a little listen to what we were saying.
Can I just say one more thing before you go on? Because
David, time I start a segue,
you're talking so much of that, let me get in there. Also in the New 52, the other disappointment of the New 52 was Wonder Woman.
Yeah, because that started out strong.
Because that started out interesting. Well, I wouldn't even say strong so much. It started interesting.
No, I said strong. I'm going to stand
by that. Okay, you stand by that. I actually thought we'd just come off of the J. Michael Straczynski reboot of Wonder Woman anyway. We had the new look. We had the new design. As soon as that finished, the New 52 kicks into gear. Justice League's Wonder Woman is actually kind of tough. She's kind of interesting. I'll pick up her book and have a look at what they do with her. And yet the book of Wonder Woman is fundamentally different to the Justice League character. And they're going into
the Justice League character is 5 years earlier, though, isn't it?
Well, I think they've caught up now, haven't they? But anyway, who knows with their timelines? Mm. That's the problem. But what we've got is we've got a Wonder Woman who is dealing with the gods and all that sort of stuff. And as much as I like Brian Azzarello, I just don't think I'm that interested in his take on Wonder Woman.
No.
I want to see... I'd rather see Gail Simone's take on Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I just kind of look at it and go, once again, another book, like you with Green Arrow. I dropped off.
I'd love to see someone, even though she writes for Marvel, I'd love to see someone like Kelly Sue DeConnick take on Wonder Woman, because she's did amazing things with Captain Marvel.
Mm.
So someone like that, who's got those sort of sensibilities, I'd love
to see. And somebody, Judd Winnick, took over Power Girl at one point. I could see him writing Wonder Woman.
Judd Winnick could be good. He writes good, strong female characters. Yeah. That's just one of the things I lament. He introduced a character of Mia Dearden in Green Arrow, which was the Speedy in that book. This is before the New 52. And that's the thing I missed about the New 52. All those little characters that got introduced, they got developed and had these beautiful arcs forming, just don't exist anymore.
Oh, Power Girl had a sidekick called Terra through most of her run. What happened to her?
Some of Green Arrow's sidekicks are in the TV series.
Yeah.
Eddie Fires is there. But, you know, we had Eddie Fires. We had the son, Connor Hawke. Mm. We had Mia that I just mentioned.
Arsenal,
Roy Harper, who is around technically in Red Hood and the Outlaws, I know, but he was a very different character. All those people just don't exist. You know, the relationship between Black Canary, the Black Canary timeline seems to be completely different to the one in
Birds of Prey is another one that's very disappointing. Birds of Prey started strong. I followed it through up until, I don't know, probably 2-3 issues ago, and just kind of went, one day I've got new comic books and I just kind of went, I'll read that later, and never came back to it.
And I'm finding that increasing with DC. It's kind of like, I'll read that later. There's a few books that I'll keep reading immediately, and we've just got a cat in the studio suddenly. Yeah,
there she is.
So just for people who can't see inside the studio, which will be all of you, except for
Nicholas. But you may hear her rustling around.
You may hear a cat at some stage in the background.
Anyway, so sorry to segue you. I just thought we mentioned a couple more titles.
No, David, look, that's twice you've interrupted me in a segue, and I'm feeling a bit miffed, but we won't dwell on that too much because this is a party and
woo!
I can cry if I want to. I went back to issue 34 when we first started talking about Marvel Now.
Ooh.
And our views of Marvel Now at the time weren't quite as positive as they are now. Marvel Now. Now, this has been announced by Marvel this week. I'll bring up the official press release here in front of me.
Must you?
Marvel's official take on this is the most popular characters, the most acclaimed creators, the most ambitious stories. This is Marvel Now. Basically, what they're doing is they're going to they're not rebooting. They're re-evolving. The entire Marvel line.
That's a new word for us. I got to write that one down. Hold on.
It's not a reboot. It's not a reimagining. It's not a re-envisaging. It's a revolution.
Oh, dear. It's a re-something.
From that point onwards, from October through to February, there'll be new number ones for all of the major characters every week.
See, I think this is a bad idea. I'm sorry. Call me old-fashioned.
Now, David, I actually took a bit of a straw poll out on the street, and I ran into a guy who runs the Quickie Mart in Springfield.
Oh, yes.
And this is what he had to say about it.
Oh, you have got to be kidding, sir. First, you think of an idea that has already been done, and then you give it a title that nobody could possibly like.
How wrong we were.
Yeah, we're not often wrong on this show. But, Marvel Now is probably one of the best things that's happened to Marvel in the last couple of years.
One of the best things that's happened to comic books in the last, at least the last 12 months.
I went back and I looked at the stuff I am reading on a monthly basis now, and I dare say the first books that I reach for every month are things like Hawkeye and Daredevil and Jason Aaron's take on Thor. And
All new X-Men
and
Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron now.
Hello.
That was the result of a cat.
That's the cat.
I'll get that later. If we don't get pulled apart by this monstrous cat that will destroy us all. You should say this cat's the skinniest cat
she's
I've ever seen.
She's determined to be on this desk.
She wants to be. She's been listening to 50 of these issues, and now she wants to be on the 50th one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you for our
We're going to have the cat removed. It's okay. It's
our second audience member, Molly the cat. Thank you for stopping by for this brief cameo. Watch this. I've just got in. Someone else wants to wish us a cameo 50th birthday. Hello, true believers. Thank you for stopping by. You know, when I invented Behind the Panels 18 months ago, it was the most marvelous creation I'd ever come up with. You know, fellas, I thought a podcast about comics would be marvelous. So I just wanted to say excelsior, excelsior, excelsior. Can I go now?
Thanks, Stan. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought he'd just stop by and say hi. He's taking the cat out. On his
I got
way
an idea for a
door.
Comic book now, though. It's called Behind the Panels, Man.
Marvelous, David. Marvelous. Look, it's a bit really as Stan would say, make mine Marvel, because it's been a fabulous, you know, 6 months or so. Like, it's October, I think we said it kicked off.
Look, Marvel, we've said it on this show several times, and we were very wrong when we heard about it. I mean, basically, let's face it, New 52 was hot. We heard Marvel go, ooh, let's reboot. We all went, are you joking?
Yeah.
What's the story? That's not what Marvel planned, and that was. And I think it was badly promoted at the beginning. Mm. I think what Marvel did was took DC to school, and we've said this before. Basically, they said, you don't need to start the whole universe again. You just need to refresh it a little bit.
Yeah, and look, really, what they did was this, and this is something I've said before, the novel thing of actually taking good writers and good artists, pairing them together and putting them on a character that they might have something to say about.
Yeah, and taking people who have been working on one particular book for a very long time, mm-hmm, and saying, how about we put you something fresh?
Mm. So that's why you've got things like Bendis having finished his historic run on Avengers, goes on to do basically Space Avengers with Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, we've only seen tastes of that so far.
And taking on basically the second family, not the first because that would be Fantastic Four, but the second family of the Marvel Universe with the X-Men.
He's doing Uncanny X-Men, which is, you know, another flagship title.
Yeah.
So far, so good with that book. Apparently, I was actually speaking to a guy who works at a comic shop here in Sydney, King's Comics. We don't get any endorsement from them, but we'd like to if anyone from King's Comics is listening. One of the guys there was saying that they had him, at a convention or a panel or something a few years ago, and they said it was amazing watching him on that. He'd be on the panel, he'd be on the table, he'd be talking to people, and then second he had his minutes of spare time, he'd turn around and he'd start writing scripts there when he was sitting there, and they think that, you know, some of the stuff that he was writing then you can see coming up now.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing that this guy must never stop working. When I'm trying to secure him for an interview, and I've had a few emails with him, and he was like, sounds good, my wife's just had a baby, but so you'll have to be patient with me. Not that I'm writing 6 monthly titles, you know. And it's, I mean, like, this guy's writing 6 monthly titles, he's just had a kid, and he's still pumping out amazing quality work. I mean, that's the kind of people that Marvel have, and it's even though DC's been poaching.
I mean, DC's also got. I mean, DC has Geoff Johns.
DC's got some amazing people, but I think when you've got that much talent, and they have poached a lot from Marvel over the last couple of years, when you look at that much talent that's over there, and still you have these fundamentally flawed books that have got 22 cancelled titles, there's something wrong with editorial and not at the artist writer level, because they're not pushing it in the direction that it should be pushed. Marvel seem to be letting the creators do what they want with the books, and you're getting some really interesting things from mainstream comics. That's not to say DC aren't doing some exciting things. I think Lemire and Sorrentino's Green Arrow is really bold for a mainstream comic. But when you've got something like Hawkeye coming out, which is really, really interesting, because Hawkeye has got something like artwork that you wouldn't expect. Things that seem gimmicky at first that actually become integral parts of the story by the end of it. That is a book that would have been a creator-owned book off in Image or something like that a few years ago. It is, to me, one of the best reads every month as a Marvel mainstream comic. Daredevil, same story. They're not even part of Marvel now, but it was part of that stealth reboot.
Well, what's interesting is the books that were, and unlike DC, where they basically said everything stops, everything restarts, with Marvel, even though they went into the Marvel Now concept, the books that were working have basically just rebranded. Have you noticed that?
Mm.
So, like, She-Hulk, for instance, Red She-Hulk, I should say. Red She-Hulk has now got, it's up to issue 50 or 51 or whatever it is, and they just started at issue 49, just started carrying the Marvel Now logo.
Mm.
I mean, they didn't say, let's renumber it, let's restart it, let's recreate it. They said, this is a book that's solid, this is a book that's working, let's just slide that into the Marvel Now continuum. Same thing with Daredevil. Daredevil's just basically slid into the same continuity as it stands now.
Absolutely. But I just look at what I was reading a few years ago, but now on a monthly basis, I'm at least picking up all new X-Men, Avengers, I'm looking at Captain America. I'm looking at FF and Fantastic Four. I'm looking at Guardians of the Galaxy, Indestructible Hulk. I'm looking at Iron Man. I'm looking at New Avengers. I'm looking at Nova. I'm looking at Superior Spider-Man is one we haven't mentioned, which took us both by surprise, but how good that was on such a stupid concept.
Yes.
Became such a brilliant thing. Thor, God of Thunder. I'm looking at Uncanny Avengers, Uncanny X-Men, X-Men Legacy, all these books. Even Young Avengers has caught my eye. And, of course, the other ongoing series like Daredevil and Hawkeye and Red She-Hulk and Age of Ultron and soon the Thanos Rising miniseries that's coming out. I mean, these are all choice selections. And I didn't think that... They're all books that I'm reading monthly. There's something I never thought that I'd ever be into. So that's... I think Marvel have done what DC did initially, which is bringing in new audience members. But I think they're keeping them there with just damn good writing.
Yeah.
And I'm very conscious of the time, David, that we're pushing on towards 2 hours. So let's just quickly...
So for those in the podcast land who don't understand, if we exceed 2 hours and 6 minutes, basically the files start to crash. Right. So we want to always try and keep it less than 2 hours and 6 minutes.
So let's just talk back. Let's just look back quickly over the last 50 issues. What are some of the favorite things that we've done?
I think for me personally, I think it's when we hit those little gems that I had not come in contact with. So for me, I think Mouse was a revelation because I hadn't read it up until that point. And when you mentioned doing it, I kind of went, oh, Mice and the Holocaust.
It
felt like homework.
Yeah.
Pedro and Me felt like homework. Mm-hmm. And yet it was actually the closest I've come to actually being in tears on the show.
And that was
a moment when we talked about the book and everything else, and then you played that clip
where he was talking,
and we actually put a voice to him, and it's actually choking me up now. Where I actually heard him, it actually sent goosebumps.
I shed a tear when I was pulling those clips because it was just so close to having read the book and then going and looking for those things. And that was
a very emotional moment. Another moment for me was actually when we did Raymond Briggs's When the Wind Blows.
Mm.
And you actually said, I want to thank you for introducing me to this because you thought you had read it, but you hadn't.
Mm.
And suddenly you went, I want to thank you for introducing me to this. And it was like, you're welcome, you know? And it's like, these are the sort of moments. I mean, yes, we've read some really great books and we've read some really mediocre books. But for me, it's the moments where we go, we've genuinely found something.
Well, it was the same with you introduced me to, you said, read Guardians of the Galaxy. The movie's coming out.
Well,
you need to read
let me put it out there right now. I want to thank Josh, not Josh, our old co-host, but Josh, who I work with, who actually said, you've never read the Marvel, the Cosmic Universe? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And he put me onto it. And then... Continue on.
I mean, that was amazing. You start from Annihilation, you work your way up through the Thanos Imperative, and you don't stop. It is just, and you start reading all the spin-offs like the Nova series ongoing, all that, all of it written by Abnett and Lanning. So that's amazing.
And I think that's for what you were saying before. What is that favorite thing of the last 50 issues? It's the same basic concept where it's that rediscovery of what we loved in comics in the first place.
And I remember when I put you onto Alias very early on, and that was a big one for you. That was the Jessica Jones series that was kind of set in the Marvel Universe, but it was the Max lines, it was mature readers. She didn't have a lot of the superheroes, but it was just a different take on...
It was also my introduction to Bendis.
It was the introduction to Brian Michael Bendis, yeah. So there you go. Look, we've done things like Sandman, which I have to go back and read more on.
Sandman, once again, that's one of the reasons why we did the show in the first place, because Sandman was a book that I have seen on the shelves for years. It is a book that I've always gone, that looks interesting. Neil Gaiman, I like Neil Gaiman, looks interesting, and never got around to reading
it. And it is actually quite a brilliant book.
You to say, let's do Sandman. It basically pushed me in the direction of saying, okay, now I have to finally read this.
And look, for me, it was Walking Dead.
Yes.
A book that was, good... I think 80 issues in when we first, or maybe even almost 90 issues in when we first started doing that. And we read the first arc, and it was a book that I'd never read, and I wanted to read it because I wanted to watch the TV series, but I'd been putting off that as well because I wanted to read the book.
Yeah.
And the book, I mean, I've now caught up to 108 issues or whatever we're up to, 109 possibly. And I'm not as big a fan of the book now, but when you first sort of pushed me to read it, I was amazed at how good this thing was.
Yeah, look, as far as I'm concerned, after you get past about 50 or 60 issues, you're kind of jumped the zombie. But, it's because as we've said before, we've talked about this many times, where Walking Dead is a real case of where it's literally wash, rinse, and repeat.
Mm.
And I think after you've done that three or four times, you go, okay, I'm now kind of over it. But to Kirkman's credit, he's clever enough to throw in a doozy of a moment where you go, oh, how are they going to do something with that? And I think spoilers for the Walking Dead comic book, not the TV series. But the moment for me, I think, where he basically spun me back into the series was when he had Carl shot in the head. And I went, I remember reading that issue and going, what the hell did I just read?
Well, that's actually in the most recent issues, that actually made Carl a more interesting character. Yeah. Because he's like, I'm not quite sure I can do this anymore. I'm slow. I'm weak. I'm a liability.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that suddenly made him,
because it also turned everything on its head. Because all the fans, as is usual with comic book fans, we all sit around going, well, I don't know if we could lift Thor's hammer, and you know how they do it. And there was all this talk online, and when you talk to people about it, who are basically saying they're gonna. It's gone as far as it can go. And this was really one of the speculations at one point. It's gone as far as it can go. They're now going to flash forward, and it'll be Carl's story. And Rick will be gone. And it will be like a new character carrying on. That was the speculation. And then for him to shoot Carl in the head, everybody kind of stopped in their tracks and went, whoops.
Yeah.
that's not going to happen now after all. So I think, to Kirkman's credit, he knew how to turn it around.
If they did that, if they flash forward and told the stories of the children, they're joining Sweet Tooth and Why the Last Man as kind of endings to great indie comics.
Well, I actually think Walking Dead needs to come to conclusion now anyway. We're in desperate threat now of basically hindering the quality of that comic, because people will remember it as being the comic that went too long, which is kind of what's also happening with Invincible, which I really like Invincible, also by Kirkman, but I think it's kind of done, you know? And it's like, I think when these comics reach 100, 110 issues, we're kind of done. And this is why Marvel and why DC continue volumes, where they basically say, okay, it's a new volume of the comic book, it's new creators, it's new writers, it's new, and they basically refresh them. Because then we get fresh takes on them. Whereas the creator-owned comic book never gets that.
No.
And Kirkman is arguably probably the most successful creator-owned comic book.
Between that and his Invincibles as well.
That's what I'm saying. Those two comics are both over 100 issues now. And you look at it and go, I can't think off the top of my head any other creator-owned comic that's gone past 100 issues.
Not many.
So I think you kind of go, you either got to bring in new writers and get a fresh take on it, or close it. Something else.
Spawn did for Image, but that's had different writers over the years.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, for me, some of my favorite moments were finding those books that I didn't really know anything about going in. Mm-hmm. Things like Andy Diggle's Ratcatcher.
Oh, yes.
That was such a brilliant little book. Obviously very inspired by a few Hollywood films and things along the way. The look of the main characters, very much one of them very much inspired by Morgan Freeman in Seven. Things like that. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about comics. I'm jumping ahead a little bit to something we said we'd talk about, which is what we've learned. And I think it's to sometimes not judge a book by its cover, to dip in, to throw yourself as widely as possible. And I think a lot of people do get hung up on capes and think that's the be-all and end-all of comics.
Yeah.
And certainly I did for the longest time too, because that's what I wanted to say.
Well, and I have to say that, you know, I have cast a wide net in the sense of this show in particular. We've read a whole cross-section of stuff. My favorite comic books are still capes.
My genre. It's the same reason why I still get a big kick out of going to action movies.
Exactly. You know? And for me, capes is that whole kind of the concept of that escapism and the superhero and having powers. It's like watching a great science fiction movie or a great action movie. You're right. So that's, I'm always.
Because when they're done well, when you get something like Iron Man Extremis, which we did, which is a flawless action adventure cape story.
And made me end up reading the entire volume of that run.
That's amazing, but then you also get, you know, interesting takes on capes, something like Superior, which we both loved, which was kind of looking at what superheroes meant from the perspective of the little guy and what it would suddenly mean to get those powers when you're the most powerless person in the world.
Absolutely, and then you take, you know, and Mark Millar is a master of this, because we have Superior doing it that, we have Kick-Ass saying, what if the average guy put on a costume and just tried to do this.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then you've got Nemesis, where he says, what if there were no superheroes, but somebody became a supervillain?
Yeah.
What happens there? You know? So he's always experimenting with this concept, you know, of saying, what if, you know?
Yeah, and I really like that about him. And then you find, as you delve into it, you find absolute gems like The Underwater Welder from Jeff Lemire, which is one of the most recent ones that I've just loved the hell out of.
Underwater Welder, as we said, Mouse,
Pedro and Me,
where these are really touching. One of the ones we will be doing over the next 12 months, we haven't picked a date yet, which will be Love and Rockets, which is also supposed to be a really touching, amazing love story.
Love and Rockets is a lot of it. And
we're just trying to find which arc to actually take.
I mean, I'd like to start at the beginning. I've heard that the Death of Speedy arc is one of the best ones to read. And that's not a spoiler because it's the title of the trade paperback.
Yeah.
But it is another one of those sort of personal stories that just, you know, promised to make us cry again. So we're going to have our box of tissues handy.
And there's also been, over the last couple of months, there's been a rash of new detective ones like Ratcatcher. And also Andy Diggle's got, what's it called? The four-issue...
Oh, he's got... we've got Trillium.
Shock. What's it called? Oh man, my mind's gone blank. His four-issue new one that's just come out with Jock.
Snapshot.
Snapshot. Thank you. That's the one I was thinking of. Which we will also cover once it's complete.
And they've also got Trillium coming out from Jeff Lemire as well.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming up, and we wouldn't even be looking at this stuff if we hadn't had such a great experience with. Not only Ratcatcher, but Bendis's Fire.
Oh, Fire as well.
Fire, which we both really enjoyed as well. And so you look at it and go, we start looking at it going, wow, there's a real treasure trove in that genre to have a look at. And once again, it's not just kids.
And so I think sometimes it's a matter of finding a writer or artist you like. And going and seeing what else they've done, because chances are they didn't start out in capes, because it's very difficult to get a job at DC or Marvel. Maybe they've done some creator-owned stuff before, maybe they've done some creator-owned stuff since. And that's certainly how I found about some of these gems that we've done over the years. Sometimes it's just, you know, go out and buy one of those 1,001 comics.
Backfires. Sometimes it backfires. We went out and we read The Lighter Side of the Punisher. And we went out and we read The Punisher Meets Archie. And we went, that was actually kind of amusing, and we should do another Archie comic book. And so we went out seeking, and we did Archie Meets Kiss, and we realized that was a huge mistake.
Yes.
we shouldn't have gone near that.
But that was almost as big a mistake as John Carter, Warlord of Mars, The Fall of the Baboon.
That's the one, yeah.
It's actually called Fall of Barsoom, which was so bad that it had a page with the same dialogue printed twice.
With different pictures.
With different pictures.
Yeah.
But exactly the same dialogue. Look, you know, but that's the thing. Not every comic is going to be great. Like, not every movie is going to be great.
The Last Christmas was another one.
Last Christmas was pretty terrible. But it was Christmas. We didn't care. We were drunk.
If only that was true.
I wish I'd been drunk while I was reading it. Look, it's been a great little ride, and we hope to do this for at least another 50 years.
And we make it sound like we're not coming back. It's been a great ride, people.
No, the thing is, we're loving this so much, we're coming back weekly, because the reason we're not doing other shows at the moment is because we don't have the passion for movies that we have for comics at the moment, because frankly, far more exciting things are happening in comics right now than are happening in the movies. But on that topic, we were asked by a reader what our favourite comic book adaptations were. David, quick, your top three or four comic book
favorite
adaptations.
I'm going to go back to 1977 and say the Star Wars adaptation that came out during that time, which was my first touch to Star Wars.
Oh, right. I was thinking the other way around, but
no, we'll go both. We'll go both directions as well, because I also have to say Kick-Ass going the other way.
Yes.
Is definitely the other one. So if you go one way, you go film to comic book.
Yeah.
That Star Wars comic book actually probably was put me on a road to reading comic books. Going the other way around, I think the Kick-Ass, even though they changed the ending, I think is probably one of the most faithful adaptations in tone and concept I've ever seen. And worked. And showed that you could stay faithful to the comic book and make it work. And I think that was very, very important.
I would agree with you on Kick-Ass. I do remember reading, just for the film to comic book adaptation, there was a Star Trek series that bridged the gap between Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4. And I really enjoyed that. I don't read, as a rule, a lot of adaptations of movies to comic books, those kind of things, and those sort of licensed properties. Mm-hmm. They don't tend to interest me, because I like... You know, I watched Star Wars for the films, not necessarily the expanded universe.
In my case, I was 10 years old, and I was actually traveling. I was traveling from Florida all the way. Florida to California, and Star Wars had hit, and I couldn't get to see it. And I saw the Time magazine cover, which had Darth Vader's head on it, and I was getting very excited. And I picked up, it was big jumbo sized comic book of the adaptation, and I read it on the bus on the way to California. And I remember arriving in California, literally the day I arrived in California, we went to see Star Wars.
Mm.
And it was like, then the whole world changed, of course.
Yeah.
You know, from a 10-year-old's point of view. So that adaptation was like, I read it, I think, probably 10 times. You just keep going, oh, I can't wait till this out. And what's so funny is it's so different to the movie.
I've got reprints of that adaptation. It is very different because it's probably based on the script. And
yeah,
not on
absolutely. The other one I thought we should mention is, and this is a controversial one. It always is controversial. But I'm going to mention Watchmen.
Yeah, look, I think it's not given its dues because it did the best job you could possibly do in adapting a very, very an impossible book to adapt.
And how many directors were signed on to it, including Terry Gilliam and many others, who basically were signed on to it, couldn't get it done, and declared it unfilmable.
Mm.
Outright declared it
unfilmable. Washed their hands of it.
Zack Snyder, to his credit, and it's not a perfect film, but I really love the hell out of it because I think I'm gonna quote Kevin Smith here, who actually has coined the phrase. He said, "It is the best Watchmen movie we will ever get."
Yeah.
Period. That's it.
For me, look, I think Iron Man's going to be a massive one always because I was not convinced of this thing. I kind of went in like a lot of people, sort of being aware. I was probably slightly more aware of Iron Man than your average cinema punter. But hadn't really read the character, walked out thinking, well, I'm an Iron Man fan now.
Yeah.
And whatever these guys do again, I want to go and see it. And I went back and saw it, you know, again because I saw it in the States and went back and saw it again when I hit Australia. And, you know, that was it. That was it for me. I was sold into that Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yep. I was 100%, particularly after that end of credit sequence when Nick Fury turns up. And I was like, yeah. Because the most recent Marvel thing that I'd read with Iron Man would have been Mark Millar's The Ultimates.
Yes.
So it was a definite line through for me. Look, I'll always have since we've been doing the show, it's been the Marvel films that have been the the ones. There's been very little to challenge it, except, of course, Green Lantern, which is still the best movie ever made.
In all seriousness, I mean, Nolan's Batman films are an exception.
Yeah.
All right. So with the exception of maybe the third one. But the first two, they're an exception. And yes, they are an exceptional piece.
But I think DC have just done it better on television. I haven't got enough good things to say about Arrow.
Mm.
That's not just because I'm a Green Arrow fan. It's a damn good series as well.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I'm just going to say very, very quickly that, look, I am a nerd. I'm a geek. And there's no denying that because I can rewatch Green Lantern. I can rewatch Wolverine.
Mm.
I can rewatch the Ghost Rider films. They're bad. I can look at them from a film person's point of view and go, these are not great films. But from the nerd geek point of view, I sit there and go, there's my heroes on screen.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just love watching them. And I think from a kid's point of view, that's all they're going to love too.
Absolutely.
You know, and we sometimes forget that us 30, 40-something-year-olds are not always the target audience for these things. Look, David, which actually brings us to talking about next week's show.
Yep.
We're going to be looking at this has been our pretty good 50th anniversary episode. Next week is, and I say next week because we're back to a weekly format, episode 51, we'll be looking at The Deep, which is an Australian comic. It's actually two comics. It's the volume one, The Deep, Here Be Dragons, and volume two, Deep, The Vanishing Island, written by Australia's Tom Taylor, who's also been doing some great stuff in the States at the moment. I think he's writing the Injustice Gods Amongst Us adaptation, right, and things like that.
We might even touch a little bit on that as well.
Yeah, I think we should. But it's actually a book written specifically for young adults, which is it's not going to be quite the same kind of beat that we have for some of our other books, but it's good to see that someone's writing comics specifically. And it's a good underwater adventure. So I do like
a good underwater adventure.
We will be joined in the studio by Ryan Huff, who is editor of geekofoz.com, who's been a sort of a friend of the show and a friend of my site, The Real Bits, for a long time. But he's also got his own comic book podcast that he does with a friend called Beardy and the Geek.
Sounds like us.
it does, except we've both got beards. Beardy and the Geek is focusing specifically on Australian comics. So Ryan's here as our resident Australian comics expert.
Excellent.
Coming up in the weeks after that, we've got things like Grant Morrison's Happy. We've also got the big X-Men special.
Happy will also mark the return of
our very good
guest,
friend Dave Longo from damngoodcup.com. Also, another reason to stay tuned next week for The Deep is that we'll be giving away some prizes as well. So stay tuned. You'll have to listen to win them. But until then, this has been Behind the Panels 50th anniversary spectacular. It's been an absolute... And look, you know, the one thing we haven't said is we have to thank you. for listening to it. For those of you who this is your first episode, thank you for stopping by. This is pretty much what you get.
And you heard the clips, you know it's always the same.
You know it's the same. if you've been with us since episode one, you may need to seek help.
And I hope that's been a nice trip down memory lane for you.
Yeah. I think Nicholas wants a plug next to us here. Nicholas McFay, which is our host, David's. So is that what you're doing? Were you wanting a plug?
No, I think he was just saying thank you. But it's youtube.com/ Nicky McVay for his animated videos.
So there you go. I gave you a plug and he didn't even want one. There you go.
So there's his plug for him. We should also put a plug out there and say that as of next week, possibly middle of this week, so by the time this podcast comes out probably, there should be T-shirts up.
Yes.
We'll have a link on behindthepanels.net.
It'll be to Cafe Press.
Yeah, it'll be to our cafe, to the Geek Actually store. We'll put the link directly on the website, though, so it's nice and easy for you to find.
And for those of you who've been listening for a while, some of the T-shirts look very familiar.
Yeah.
So thank you once again for stopping by. We'll be back next week and every week for another 50 weeks, we hope. So
and more.
Until then, this is, as always, Behind the Panels.